Okay, I'm Laura Deckett from the University of Minnesota. I was the PI of this study and worked with these colleagues. Couldn't have done the study without them, as is always the case. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. I had two funding sources. They were modest because of the, and that is the point we were at with our work, that we needed to do feasibility work. I'd like to give special thanks to the following persons who were involved in and helpful in the study, but were not authors. So what is Reiki? It's classified as an energy and biofield therapy that is holistic in nature, in action, and is believed to decrease stress, increase relaxation, decrease pain, and enhance a sense of well-being. Reiki practitioners use a series of hand positions with the intent of allowing energy in the environment to pass through their bodies and hands to the person receiving Reiki. A full Reiki session might last an hour or more, but often sessions are shorter and may not involve the full body, maybe just head and shoulders. No adverse effects of Reiki have ever been reported in the literature, to my knowledge, and I've looked. But so we were asking the question, what about Reiki for premature infants? Reiki is, by being born early, the premature infants are born vulnerable, but they also miss out on important sensory stimulation that occurs in the uterus before birth. Their time there is shorter, so they miss out on that. The NICU environment, they are really bombarded with many sensory stimuli, and many of those can be really unpleasant or noxious. Reiki is a means of providing positive touch and perhaps healing energy that may provide benefit to these infants. We wondered if Reiki could help them, but we also wanted to make sure it didn't harm them. This slide illustrates some desirable outcomes for premature infants that might be enhanced by certain sorts of touch therapy, including Reiki. I have both, I have the normal values and then what would be considered a sign of instability in these infants. However, it's important to note that in premature infants, such as we studied, instabilities are fairly common and can be just because of their immaturity, but they also can be due to other factors, and so the difference has to be discerned. There have been no previous studies that have been published, at least, of using Reiki with premature infants. There have been Reiki studies of adults for a variety of conditions, and there have been studies of other types of touch with premature infants. And the outcomes listed on the previous slide were the types of outcomes that have been studied in other types of touch studies. The most interesting, relevant published study that I found in the literature actually was published after our grant was funded, but before we had really started it. It was, the primary hypothesis was that therapeutic touch, a different type of touch therapy, would increase heart rate variability, and that hypothesis was supported. And the heart rate variability that they measured would be a good change, it would be positive. The features of their study are listed on the slide, but it was short term, no direct touch. The babies were quite small, and so that's why with healing, with therapeutic touch, people often don't put the hands on, and these babies at the gestational age that they studied them were quite vulnerable, and that was another reason for not physically touching them. Okay, I'll let you take a quick look at the specific aims here. Basically, we were checking to see acceptability and physiological safety, responses in the infants, and to check out our methods and measurements. when we, you know, did budget figures, we felt that we could pay for a sample size of 10, and with the plan of each infant being in the study over a 10-day period. So that would have yielded 100 observations. But I'll tell you more about that in a minute. The study was done at two children's hospitals in Minneapolis, St. Paul. It was a pre-test, post-test, single group feasibility study. And infants started the study when they were between 1 and 2 weeks of life. On each day, the study activities were done at the end of a particular feeding, usually in the afternoon or evening. Before we started each day, we checked in with the nurse caring for the infant and got a status report and just made sure everything was okay to proceed. So we had quite a bit of communication with the caregivers to learn what was happening when we weren't there. Our intervention, we tried to define very clearly. There were two Reiki persons who provided the Reiki. I was the level two practitioner, and my colleague Debbie Ringdahl is a Reiki master, and she was the other. We tried to do 50, we did 50% of the sessions with each baby, each of us, because of our different levels of expertise. They were in the study for 10 days. Sessions were 15 minutes long. We thought about that a long time. About the timing, and coupled with the feedings. And then we decided on a protocol that we implemented with a little bit of flexibility, but stayed pretty true to it, and that was to use three hand positions, and so there was head, just the head, then either the abdomen or back, depending on the positioning of the baby, and then a head, foot, or rump position. This is just our data collection sheet. I know you can't read it, but to give you an idea, we had a one-page form. The observer had to do all these observations in the first 5 minutes, the second 15 minutes, and the last 5 minutes. And it took constant vigilance to do those observations. So it was a challenge for the people who did this, including myself. So enrollment, we had one infant that ended up being a pilot because the baby unexpectedly went home after 3 days of being in the study. But we actually made some adjustments, not in the protocol itself, but in how we implemented it. And so it was helpful that we had that one baby that it didn't turn out would compare with the other nine that we had. All the others were in the study for the full 10 days. So, in terms of results, first, acceptability to the parents. More than 50% of parents approached by our clinical collaborators agreed to learn more about the study. They were the people who first approached them. Now, I don't know if it would have been different if Debbie or I could have made the first contact, but our IRBs like to put that barrier between the investigators who are not in the clinical site and the ones who are. So of the ones who agreed to talk with us, only three sets of nine sets of parents did not decide to go ahead with the study. Two of those refusals were during the time last fall when the N1H1 was at its peak in our community. And there was one other one that had some other circumstances. In terms of acceptability to the staff, and that was really mostly the nurses that where it was important to assess that acceptability, excuse me. And they were extremely interested, supportive, really couldn't have done more than they did to assist us. Okay, I wanted to say a word about respiratory rates. It was really valuable for us to try to examine them closely. We learned a lot by watching the quality as well as the rates, but they could be very hard to count because they had to be counted in that 30-second interval. if I were a staff nurse and needed to take the respirations in that way, I would try again if I didn't get them in the first time I attempted. But in our study protocol, we had to keep moving because there was something else to observe. So, but they were still very useful. The state data was very interesting. Using a standard measure of infant state, we really observed that very carefully and recorded it each minute, and it was quite interesting. I don't have time to further discuss the state measures now. I'm going to show you some examples of the oxygen saturation and heart rate data. But what I want to comment on before moving on is that we've come to increasingly appreciate that the data we systematically collected, and we were doing it constantly as the observers, was still only a small sample of what occurred during those 25 minutes, because there was a constant readout on the monitor of the heart rate and of the oxygen. And those things, there was information we didn't capture. In terms of the infants, I wanted to point out that the ID numbers that are single digit were from one of the NICUs, and the ones in the hundreds are from the other. The babies from the single digit hospital were all bigger, more stable, including that baby that went home after 3 days. The other hospital followed our selection criteria and included our clinical contact people and included babies that fit the criteria but were definitely less stable at the time we were with them. At the first hospital, sometimes they were so stable that I think it would have been hard to really, if it had been a controlled trial, it might have been hard to show anything happening because they were so stable. So. Now, this is just an overview of the heart rate data over the 10 days for the 9 babies. And I just wanted to point out that there aren't that many incidences recorded where the heart rates are out of the stability zones, because the vertical lines indicate the pre, during, and after Reiki, and the horizontal lines indicate the vital signs that would be outside the range of considered most stable. Now I want to show you a couple of things about some specific babies, because I want to get, what I am so impressed with is how we have to know what's going on with these infants when we're not there or during the day, because a lot of other things happen to them. These were little twins, and they were making very good progress by the end of the 10 days and went home, were getting ready for discharge. But they were having some, baby two was having increased gastric reflux starting on day 6 with some irregular respirations, some oxygen desaturations. And then on days 7 through 10, this infant was receiving an IV antibiotic for a urinary tract infection. Now, none of those things were believed to be related to the Reiki. Certainly causing a urinary tract infection was not likely to happen with our protocol. So that's just an example. The other baby in that twin pair was more stable. This was our youngest gestational age baby, and she was having also some reflux, and would occasionally, on day 1, she would have an occasional brief drop in her heart rate during the 24-hour period. And what you see there is one incident of a heart rate that we recorded that was lower than her norm. It didn't go out of the stability zone, but she'd been running higher heart rates and then came right back up. That was a self-corrected change. And then there was another similar episode on day 6. But then on day 7, the baby was having tachycardia higher than usual. And a few minutes into the session, the isolate alarm went off. It had overheated a little bit. And as soon as it was turned down, then the baby came back to her normal. And again, we needed, it was important that we took note of that so we could interpret our data more carefully. This is another set of twins. On day infant 103, on days 7 and 8, had irregular respirations with runs of shallow respirations followed by oxygen desaturations. These desats were self-corrected, and nurses were attributing this to reflux and immaturity. Now, having said that, these infants were stable enough to be moved to open cribs in a satellite nursery halfway through the study. So, again, it's all relative to what you see in these babies. 5 minutes. Okay. This was the set of twins where one infant was much smaller than the other twin, discordant twins. And so on day 3, I wanted to point out that the baby had already been scheduled to have a blood transfusion because of a low hemoglobin and some more irregularities in the vital signs, but the nurse thought it would be fine to go ahead with the session. However, about halfway through, the baby had desat and that required the nurse to come in and stimulate. We did not do that. The nurses did that. They were always right outside the room. And I suggested, and she agreed, that we should discontinue just for that day. All the other days, things were fine. The baby was much better and had been moved to the satellite nursery the day after that incident and continued to progress. This was a very stable baby throughout, never had an O2 sat monitor while we were with her, or during the days we were with her. So there's not a lot to comment on there, and there was one other baby like that. This is just some samples of the oxygen saturation data, and I make a couple of comments about that. I already mentioned that infants 2-3, 102 and 103 had some problems with reflux, respirations, desats, around the clock on some of the days. Infant 2 is the one who was receiving the IV antibiotic days 7 through 10. So you can see some relationship between those times when there are any desats and what else was going on with the infants. This is the weight data for all 9 babies from birth to hospital discharge. And I think that it's really interesting to see that discordant twin right here, the tiniest baby, that's the twin, kind of a light line. But that twin was of a big, these are not, the baby was small for gestational age, who was so small. So the other twin just did very, very well. And the other baby that had the slower growth curve was that other smallest baby. Nonetheless, and then you see where the line stopped, that's when they were discharged. So the bigger babies went home earlier as they should have. But all of the babies were, after that initial period when they tend to lose some weight, they all grew well for the gestational age at birth. And those lines are the approximate times they were in the study, the horizontal lines. Now we can't attribute their nice little growth curves to the study because we didn't have a control group. But again, this suggests that they were growing well and that we don't think we did anything to harm that process. So now, what are our conclusions? And there are some other things we will be doing with the data that there just would be no time to discuss today, but we found that most parents who were approached about the study were not familiar with Reiki, but 2/3 still consented. That was the people that Debbie and I got to talk with and do the informed consent process. And again, we had the problem with H1N1 during that time. This is promising with respect to the potential for enrolling infants in such a further study. I told you the nurses had readily accepted the study and were very interested in it. This, to me, I've learned a ton about how we have to look at the total picture for the baby, and that these instabilities that I illustrated to you were not of great concern to the caregivers, but they always have to ask, is this an instability because this child is mature, or is there an infection brewing, or is there some other problem? And they have to make those discernments through laboratory tests and their 24-hour vigilance. Limitations, I think I've highlighted most of these earlier, and would like to go on to, I'm pretty sure I've touched on all of these before, so I'd like to go on to our ideas of what should be a next step study, because I think we are in a position to talk about that here. It probably should be a pilot randomized controlled trial, but with not a huge number. There feasible blinding should be used, and there are some aspects of blinding that could be used in a controlled study. I would really be very interested in us or someone else using the heart rate variability in the study. Time. Am I done? Time? Oh, okay. Oh, okay. The heart rate variability, like in the one study I pointed out to you, that is a really good indication of the infant's relaxation or stress. And if a child is not relaxed and stressed, some of the other outcome measures that I was showing to you that we looked at would be affected. So if it improved the heart rate variability, that would be a really good thing. There's would be a need to seek a balance between good measurement and still limiting intrusiveness. I think the intervention protocol we used worked really well, and so unless new information came along, I would probably stick with that. We will be further evaluating those longer-term outcomes that I mentioned, which included whatever happened to them while they were in the hospital, including during and after the study. And I have feeding information, every feeding that every baby had while hospitalized that I've looked at, but not enough to, and it was too much to incorporate. There should be enough infants in a pilot trial to have adequate power to detect a difference if there would be one. And we would want to make sure that every parent of an eligible baby had the opportunity to consider the study. And that did not happen in this study. There were many things that, it was a convenient sample, and there were many things that we, that altered when we could try to get a baby into the study. And so we would need to obtain sufficient, we or someone else would need to get enough funding to have a fully staffed study that could go on 24/7, or go on 7 days a week, until all the babies had been enrolled. So I have some references that I don't have time to show you, right? I think I should quit. Your time is. So I can get references for you if you want them, and you need to start.
That was beautiful. Really, really beautiful. It's a beautiful work.
It's been a lot of fun.
Are there questions for Dr.
So
That's just really a very beautiful piece of work. Are there any other questions for Dr. Becker? Thank you.
I know we keep it.